This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined early on this week because we have early football games Thursday and Friday by Matt Humans. Later on in the podcast, Dan Rubenstein from the Solid Verbal Podcast, also Oregon alum. He will jump on and give us his analysis of the Peach Bowl, as well as quick thoughts on what to expect in the Fiesta Bowl. Matt, before we dive into the games that we will be previewing today, the Fiesta Bowl on Thursday, Ole Miss and Miami, the Peach Bowl, Oregon and Indiana, you and I were riveted to what we were watching last night in Nashville, Tennessee. Our colleague Stormy Bonatoni was on the sidelines. One of the more enjoyable, crazy games, and knowing the stakes, how about Montana State beating Illinois State on a 4th-and-10 touchdown pass in overtime after you had not one, but two critical kicks from Illinois State blocked. Illinois State's magical run comes to an end, 35-34. The Redbirds do get the cover, and I know Kenny White in the Circa Friday Football Invitational was on the dog in that spot, but that game had everything. It had a comeback, crazy blocks, a pretty enjoyable start to the week of football for us.
Yeah, imagine if that were a primetime NFL game, how people would be going berserk, calling that an all-time classic. It was an incredible game last night for the FCS championship and a heartbreaking loss for Illinois State, man. But you got to be sound in the kicking game if you're going to win. And we just saw it twice in 24 hours with the Ravens missing a field goal with the AFC North on the line. And, kickers are the key players a lot of times, and didn't get it done for Illinois State and didn't get it done for the Ravens. But that was a hell of a game in Nashville last night. Justin Lampson, the quarterback from Montana State, I think he's going to get portal offers at big-time programs. And Taco Dowler, the receiver who you kept hyping up all night. Taco, what a great first name.
He was awesome.
I mean, Tim, when you and your wife have another son or two, I know you're planning a bigger family, big expansion. Can you name one of your kids Taco?
It'll be on the short list. Okay. It will definitely be on the short list. Taco Dowler, touchdown to win the game. 8 catches, 111 yards, rush for a touchdown in the game, gave a little bit of a backwards leap into the end zone. And he also had 12 catches for 107 yards in their season opening loss against Oregon. Not to be overlooked, Matt, how about Dylan Lord of Illinois State? 13 catches, 161 and 2 touchdowns. You know, the cool thing about the game and the time frame that it was on, it had a lot of eyeballs. I don't know what the ratings were, but it's good for these players. To your point, I imagine Taco Dowler and Justin Lamson and Dylan Lord, these guys that were playing really well last night, will probably get some offers from mid-major programs, maybe some P4 programs. So really fun game, and hopefully an indication of what is to come this upcoming week, Matt, because we have two semifinals and did not expect Miami, Ole Miss. I think both of us expected Oregon and Indiana. But let's start with the game that'll take place on Thursday night, 7:30 on ESPN. And I think on every other ESPN channel, they'll have some sort of alternative broadcast. By the way, Matt and I will be on the air, VSiN Primetime, watching this game and looking at it from a live betting standpoint. Miami comes off of the 24-14 win over Ohio State. Both you and I had the points in that one. I was pretty fortunate to get the first half under as well. And then Ole Miss, I was wrong on this one, Matt. I really thought Georgia was playing at their best. I thought Georgia would take care of business. You and I watched this game on New Year's night. Crazy game. Trinidad Chambliss just unbelievable in the victory. Right now, Mississippi, I'll call them 3, but there are some 3.5s if you like the dog. Total 51.5, 52. What are some of your thoughts as we head into the Fiesta Bowl on Thursday night?
Yeah, thank you to Kirby Smart for almost ruining what could have been an awesome week last week, college football betting. Everything was going the way we wanted it to go, and Georgia blew the big lead. Kirby Smart made a couple of really dumb decisions in the second half, the fake punt the pass into the end zone on third and goal from the six, when that should have been a Gunnar Stockton rollout, and you tell your quarterback, if it's not there, try to run it in or just go down, because you got to run 40 seconds off the clock, and they didn't do that. I know you sent out a tweet blaming the quarterback, but I blame the coach and the OC for that too. You're going to make that call. You have to tell your quarterback what to do, and obviously they didn't do it because Stockton's a high IQ player. He shouldn't make that. He shouldn't make that play. But the play call set him up for failure, and Georgia blew it. But I have to give a lot of credit to Trinidad Chambliss too because of what he did, and we'll talk about that. But Miami, the Canes have been underdogs in the first two games. Now they flip to the favorites role, so it's going to be a little bit different for them here. They went to Texas A&M. They knock off Ohio State. I was not surprised that the Canes took down Ohio State. But the Buckeyes did total 332 yards, and they had 287 yards passing. So you're going to hear a lot about how dominant this Miami defensive front is, and the Trinidad Chambliss is not going to be able to do the same things against Miami that he did against Georgia. And that might be true, but Ohio State did have some offensive success. Buckeyes were moving the ball up and down the field okay, but Tim, they weren't cashing in when they got in the red zone, and they blew a big couple of big opportunities, and that tilted the game in Miami's favor. Ole Miss had 473 total yards against Georgia. Chambliss, 362 passing with two touchdowns. Kawan Lacy, 98 rushing yards. This offense is fully capable. I think Ole Miss is going to be able to have some success against Miami D. I don't think that D is going to dominate the game. Could be wrong about that. I don't think it's going to be a great live betting game, Tim, though. We're going to be on Thursday night. This is not going to be one of those back-and-forth games where the team's going to be trading scores. It's going to be highly entertaining. I don't see that. I think it's going to be more of a low-scoring game. Carson Beck's going to have to do more to open up the Miami offense, too. In two games in the playoffs, he's got 103 and 138 yards passing. And Mark Fletcher's been the main man for Miami, running back with 262 total yards on the ground in the two playoff games. I'm leaning towards Ole Miss here. This team's just got that feel that I hate to say on a mission, but you feel like that the Lane Kiffin situation kind of galvanized this team. I was talking with Chris Felica on the Friday night show about this. That Kiffin situation could be a distraction, or it could be something that can galvanize the team, and I think the latter is what happened here, and you're seeing an Ole Miss team that's really focused, fully focused here to try to prove it can win without Kiffin. As far as the matchups go, I think these teams are relatively even, and you got to like a lot more what you see from the Ole Miss offense than you do from Carson Beck and the Miami offense right now. I've had to kind of talk myself into this. I don't love it, but I am going to play Ole Miss plus 3.5.
Yeah, it's funny because we'll get to the Peach Bowl here in just a little bit, Oregon and Indiana. I do have a couple bets on that game. I have not bet this game yet. I've kind of wavered back and forth. I know the Bear, Chris Felica, who I really trust when he bets on or against Miami or bets a Miami game, he's been pretty spot on. Sometimes you just have a feel of the team that you're betting on or against. He loved Miami in that spot against Ohio State. From my knowledge, I don't think he has bet Miami, Ohio, or Miami and Ole Miss on a side, but I know he took the under, and that would be the way that I would look here in this spot. It's not going to be an official play, but I think come Thursday night when Matt, you and I are on VSiN primetime, I'll probably have some under, maybe a little first half under as well in this one, because I think what Miami's going to want to do is a little bit what we saw in the first game against Ohio State. They had a 13-play, 83-yard touchdown drive that lasted 8 minutes in that game. I think the goal for this defense, led by, you know, a very strong edge rush in Reuben Bain and Mezidor, and they bring in Corey Heatherman, who's done a really good job, the defensive coordinator. Best defense is going to be your offense, and keeping this Ole Miss offense off of the field. So if I had to guess how this game script is, I think it's going to be a bit of a tug of war from the sense that you're going to want to try to keep Ole Miss off the field, you know, utilize Mark Fletcher, use the short passing game. And that's kind of how I see this one playing out, Matt. Maybe it opens up a little bit in the second half. I mentioned this number to Adam Burke. So far this postseason, first half unders are 27-16 so far. So you've seen kind of that feeling out process. You had a first half under in Miami and Ohio State. But man, going back to Trinidad Chambliss, Matt, that guy, I mean, what a story it is. You know, we talked about how Indiana and even Kirk Cignetti mentioned, hey, this is a movie script, how things have turned around. He's not wrong. Well, Trinidad Chambliss is a movie script, too. This guy was the, Ferris State quarterback last year, leading his program to a Division II title. There were reports, I think, that he was lined up to go to Temple. And now he's a starting quarterback in the semifinals. And he's maybe the most exciting player left in college football. I mean, he is thrilling to watch. And late in that game, you just felt like he was going to put on a show. But is he going to be able to do that again? I think that's a fair question to ask. But offensively, you pointed it out. They have some firepower. Ole Miss does. Kawan Lacy announcing he's coming back to Ole Miss. So the momentum seems to be there. And Oxford, Trinidad Chambliss is asking for a 6-year of eligibility. He's looking to come back. Harrison Wallace, 9 catches, 156 in that win against Georgia. So kind of tying myself in the knots. I think ultimately I'll probably have a little first half under in pocket going into Thursday night, but no official bet for me. But for you, Matt, it does sound like, just to kind of circle back to it, Ole Miss is probably the play that you're looking at here, catching the 3.5.
Yeah, I was actually going to probably bet that today. I don't think it's going to 4. That's not going to be a huge bet for me, but I am going to play the 3.5, because if you put out the play, you got to bet it. And I do lean to Ole Miss enough that I think it's going to be worth a bet. I've not been impressed, but I've seen from Carson Beck again in the playoffs. He's a definition of the game manager here in the last couple games. I think he's going to have to do a little bit more than that here, unless that Miami defensive front just dominates. But and you don't want to get caught up in the story and say, well, I'm rooting for Ole Miss, so I'm going to bet on Ole Miss. That's not the case. I really was impressed, really impressed, Tim, by the way Ole Miss played that second half against Georgia. So, you know, we both lost on that game. I didn't think Georgia was going to blow that lead in the second half, and Ole Miss just took over the game. Chambliss took over the game. And I think there's going to come a point here against Miami where Chambliss is going to have to take over the game, too. He's going to have to at least try.
Kirby Smart, 53 straight games victorious when winning, leading at the half, 75 straight wins when leading going into the fourth quarter, and Trinidad Chambliss and Ole Miss end both of those streaks. I'm excited for Thursday night. New blood, certainly. Miami program that hasn't been to this level in, you know, almost a quarter century, and Ole Miss has never been here. And to add in the fact that Lane Kiffin left them high and dry, it is it's a fascinating story. You know what? I think I'm gonna go ahead. Let me double check what it is out there. I think 26.5 is available at FanDuel. I think I'm gonna play first half under in this one. I just, the way I keep talking myself into, I think I'm going to bet that as well. So I think I'll go first half under. I'll add that to the best bets here. But before we get to Oregon and Indiana, Matt, you and I were mesmerized by the kicking performance from Ole Miss. Lucas Carniero, 3 for 3, game-winning field goal, hit a 55-yarder, a 56-yarder. The game-winner was from, I think, 45 or so. He looked every bit the part of an elite kicker, Matt. And you know who an elite kicker is? You and I saw him in person, and you saw him multiple times. Our guy, Kansei Matsuzawa, and our friends over at Rainbow Authentics have put together some great gear for the Lou Groza finalist, Kansei Matsuzawa, consensus All-American. It's your time to back the Tokyo Toe, the best nickname in all of college football. He's taking his precision and power to your closet with the Tokyo Toe apparel. Bold design, premium comfort, and 100% fan energy. Whether you're tailgating or tuned in, represent greatness. Visit TokyoToe.com. Once again, TokyoToe.com, and wear what the winners wear. I think there's a lot of teams out there, Matt, that would certainly have liked the services of the Tokyo Toe, whether it be in college or maybe a couple pro teams. We'll be looking at his services come next year.
Yeah, but I also think Lucas Carniero for Ole Miss is could be a key figure in this game, Tim. And he was against Georgia. because he was nails from deep. And, hey, the Buffalo Bills, the Baltimore Ravens would love to have a kicker like that right now. The Bills would have beat the Eagles if they had a kicker like that. So maybe, you know, when you handicap this, sometimes you don't put as much emphasis on the kicker. Maybe he's the guy who makes a difference here. You know, last week on the podcast, you mentioned something like Kirby Smart has coached 158 games. I don't know what the number was. And Pete Golding had coached two, right? Well, in the second half of that game last week, Kirby Smart looked like the inexperienced coach in the second half last week. And I've said this about Kirby Smart a lot. And you can't knock him too much because the guy's won a couple of national championships. But he's not a master of clock and game management, and he still makes a lot of dumb mistakes. And I said in the second half last week, that's just dumb and dumber what Georgia did to blow that game. Tim, I don't know if you recall the game. I think it was an SEC championship. It was definitely an Alabama-Georgia game.
The fake punt?
When Justin Fields was a freshman at Georgia. The fake punt, yep. I mean, that was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. And Alabama knew it the whole time, and Kirby Smart went ahead with it. So, obviously, the guy's gone on to win a couple of championships, and he's knows how to run a winning program, but I mean, you can have that experience as a head coach, and it won't matter if you can't master clock and game management. And guess who can't master that? Mario Cristobal on the Miami sideline.
Well, let's get to a team that Mario Cristobal used to coach, Matt. Oregon. The Oregon Ducks taking on Indiana. This is a semifinal. I think most of us anticipated. You have an Oregon future to win the title. I have an Oregon future to reach the title. I would actually prefer your ticket because if they win this game on Friday night, they're going to be the favorite, whoever they play, Miami or Ole Miss. Seeing the money come in a little bit on the under, 47 out there at South Point, mostly 46 and a halves out there. I bet 47 and a half at open. We talked about it on VSiN Primetime. We'll talk about the total here in just a moment. We've also seen a little bit of support in the market for Oregon. However, Matt, if you look at betting splits or you talk to odds makers like we did on Monday night on VSiN Primetime, the public is enjoying themselves some Indiana. They're infatuated by Kirk Cignetti and his squad, and understandably so. A dominant performance over Alabama, as you predicted there in the Rose Bowl. Matt, back on October 11th, Oregon closed as a 6.5 or 7-point favorite at home at Autzen. And now right now it is a 3.5-point spread in favor of the Indiana Hoosiers. Friday night, 7:30 kick on ESPN in Atlanta. The Peach Bowl, number 5 Oregon, number 1 Indiana.
Yeah, that first meeting I actually had the Hoosiers plus 7.5 at Oregon. It was 7.5 for quite a bit of time that week. And late in the week, it dropped to 7, I think, by Friday. But it was 7.5, basically, the first time. At 3.5, it's flipped 10 points. And obviously, that 7.5 was a bad number. I remember the first time these teams played in October, and I heard a lot of different analysts on VSiN talking about, well, every time Indiana has stepped up in class, they've got beat, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, this is not last year. And you and I talked about this. This Indiana team is a lot better this year than it was last year. It was Cignetti's first year. They had to step up in class on the road at Ohio State, on the road at Notre Dame. And this Indiana team has proven to be better than it was in Cignetti's first year. Well, the Hoosiers outgained Alabama 407 to 193, 215 to 23 in rushing yards. That's total dominance on the line of scrimmage. Offensive and defensive lines. And that Ducks defense allowed 34 points to James Madison. I heard a lot of people say, oh, there's no way Oregon's going to be able to win a championship with that defense. Well, Ducks come back next week and they shut out Texas Tech. So I think what you've got here are two elite coaching staffs. There's no doubt Kurt Cignetti is the greatest story in college football in a long time. But this Oregon coaching staff's pretty damn good, man. With Dan Lanning, who does, as Mike Palm correctly pointed out last week, Dan Lanning can make a couple of poor game management decisions here and there. But in general, Lanning and his two coordinators, I think, are outstanding. The Oregon offense against Texas Tech had 38 minutes time of possession. Not too many people predicted that was going to happen against that Tech defense. The first time these teams met, Dante Moore threw two picks, and Fernando Mendoza threw a pick six. Think about that, Tim. If you go back and watch that game, nobody's going to come away from that game and say, hey, these are going to be the top two picks in the NFL draft. These guys just combined for three interceptions, including a pick six. Those quarterbacks did not play very well in that first game, which is really interesting. Indiana's rushing offense, actually 37 carries for 111 yards, only 3 point yards per carry. So, it's, you know, I thought the Hoosiers controlled the game. They won 30-20 on the road and gave up a pick six, so they actually won a little bit more impressively than that score, I think. But I have a feeling this is going to be a tight game, and you know how I feel about rematches. I've talked about this a lot. When the favorite loses the first time around, I like to bet the favorite in the revenge situation. And not only that, you've got a basically a 10-point line move from the first time around. I've been driving or on the Kurt Cignetti bandwagon for a long time. I hate to bet against him. Really do hate to bet against him. But I feel like that now everybody's on the bandwagon. The bandwagon's overflowing. It might be time to jump off. And it's not going to surprise me anything that happens here. I'm not going to be surprised if Oregon wins the game. Wouldn't be surprised if Indiana wins by 14. But I think it's going to be a tight game. I don't think the Ducks are going to let the Hoosiers run away and hide like Alabama did. I'm taking the 3.5 or 4. This is one I haven't bet yet. I'm going to put out the play at 3.5, but I think a 4 might pop up later in the week, so I'm just going to wait to see if that comes back. I do have a small bet I made on Oregon plus 4 last week, but it was like a half-unit bet. I just put that in thinking that 4 was a good number and that the number should probably be 3. But I still think the public's going to bet this up to 4 again. So I've got Oregon at 8-1 to win the whole thing. I've got Indiana at 10-1. I was hoping that they would be in opposite brackets, obviously, before the playoff. But I'll have one team alive after this game. I guess it goes down to the wire. Actually, a couple nights ago, Tim, I had a dream that Indiana won this game 27-24. So we'll see if that was prophetic or not.
Well, I hope that dream is semi-accurate. I think that's a little too high scoring for my hope on this one. If we could do 24-21, I'd be just fine with it. Okay. You know, I'm looking forward to this one, as you mentioned, a rematch October 11th. This was a game where you look at the postgame win expectancy, it was dominated by Indiana. The score was actually a bit misleading. If you look at Bill Conley and the way he grades it out, and you take it with a grain of salt, it's a lot of numerical and statistical base, but his adjusted margin was 16.6 in this game, 98%+ chance for Indiana to win that game, which of course they did. But, you know, something we'll talk to Dan Rubenstein about here in just a little bit is, you know, how much has Oregon gotten better since then? Indiana's gotten better, but you look at that line and, you know, if you do just kind of basic math, Matt, that game at the time said Oregon was about 3.5 points better on a neutral. Now Indiana is laying 3.5 on a neutral. I do think Indiana will have more fans in Atlanta than Oregon, but I don't think it's going to be some sort of, you know, massive home field advantage. This game isn't being, you know, taking place in Indianapolis like the Big Ten championship was. You got two really good quarterbacks, obviously, in Dante Moore and Fernando Mendoza, more than likely going to go 1-2 in the upcoming NFL draft. But, you know, what I took away, Matt, from the Orange Bowl was, you know, this defense, as you pointed out, people were kind of crapping on them because of their performance against James Madison. It was 48-13, and they had the ball going into the end zone. It's human nature to kind of take the foot off the gas. And I know Dan Lanning was not pleased with how the first round game against James Madison finished off. And you saw the defense that was nasty against maybe a bit of an overrated offense in Texas Tech, but they held them to 215 yards of offense, and they were dominant throughout that game. They forced a bunch of turnovers, which can be, you know, looked at as maybe lucky at times, but forced four turnovers in that game. I just look at this game, Matt. I think it's going to be an absolute war between two, as you pointed out, incredibly well-coached teams in Indiana and Oregon. There's going to be revenge on the mind of Oregon, not to say that Indiana's not going to be pumped up for this game. There's no motivational edge, but you do have a Dan Lanning coach team that, you know, he finds different ways. He's from the Kirby tree. He finds different ways to get his team, you know, motivated, whether it was, you know, the Colorado game a couple years ago when they came in as the talk of the town, or, you know, earlier this year against Oklahoma State. My vision, Matt, I have not dreamt about this game like you, but my vision is just a hard fought battle on the field. So I took first half under 23.5 still out there, I believe, at FanDuel, and a full game under 47.5 for grading purposes. South Point still has a 47, so we'll say 47. And then I have no idea who's going to win this game. I have a belief that this thing comes down to the wire here, Matt. So I also will take the points with Oregon, but like you, we'll grade it at 3.5. But I think we wait and we see if that 4 resurfaces, because, you know, right now you look at the betting splits over at VSiN.com and it's early. More action's going to come in as the week goes on. 82% of the early action is on Indiana. And it does feel like after that dominant performance at the Rose Bowl, everybody anticipates this Indiana team to be this runaway freight train. And maybe they will be, Matt. They're really damn good, but so is Oregon. And, you know, I look at a team that was a 7-point favorite, now is a 3.5-point underdog on a neutral. And that's why I think this number is just a bit too high. So I will join you with the Ducks as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things in handicapping when you're on a team pretty much the entire season, and not many people believe in that team. And then all of a sudden they start to win games at the end of the year, and then everybody starts to believe in that team, and they jump on the bandwagon, and then all of a sudden you don't want to be on that bandwagon anymore. That's kind of the case here with Indiana. You know, going into the Big Ten championship game, you know, I was on Indiana against Ohio State, and I thought the Hoosiers were going to win that game, and they did. Obviously, same thing against Alabama. And now everybody believes – and now everybody wants to back Indiana, so that makes me want to look at the other side. But in terms of fundamental matchups, I think these teams are relatively even. And I think Dante Moore is going to have to step up. I said this last week. He's going to have to step up with a big performance to beat Texas Tech. I think Dante Moore is going to have – this is a big stage here. You got two quarterbacks competing to be theoretically the number one pick in the NFL draft. Moore's going to have to step up and play like a superstar against this Indiana defense, and that's not going to be easy. But that's going to be, if you bet Oregon, that's what you're going to need for the Ducks to pull off this win. Again, I think Dan Lanning and his staff probably learned a lot from that first game against Indiana. And along that theme we've been talking about, Tim, the Hoosiers probably caught the Ducks a little bit by surprise the first time around, right? Oregon players probably didn't realize that Indiana was that good and that strong defensively. And now they know, so you're not going to catch them by surprise this time.
Yeah, Oregon was coming off a bye. Everything kind of set up nicely. They had beaten Penn State just a couple weeks prior, and everything kind of lined up. Oh, Oregon will take care of business. To your point, Indiana had never, at that point, hadn't proven how good they were, and we certainly learned how good they were. A couple notes here for Indiana. Obviously, you're led by the Heisman Trophy winner and Fernando Mendoza. Doesn't make many mistakes. 36 touchdowns, 6 picks. Did throw a pick 6 against Oregon, so that's worth noting. But after throwing that pick 6, they went right back down the field and scored a touchdown. Two-headed monster in Roman Henby and Kalen Black, averaging, you know, have combined for over 1,900 rushing yards. And they got some studs out wide, man. Omar Cooper, 12 touchdown receptions. Elijah Surratt, 13 touchdown receptions. And Charlie Baker has kind of emerged here lately. So this Indiana team is no joke, as everyone knows, and they're the real deal. Can't wait to watch this one. I think it's going to be an absolute war, and two great coaching staffs. I think it's a low-scoring game, and I think ultimately, if I had to play it from a money line standpoint, I guess I would take Indiana, but I think the points are a little at a premium here, so I will take Oregon in what should be an awesome rematch. So let's do this, Matt. Let's recap it here before we bid farewell on this portion of the pod with our best bet recap.
Best bets recap.
All right, Matt, we got two more games on the FBS front semifinals. What do you got from a best bet standpoint heading into the semifinals?
All right, 3-2 last week. Thanks again, Kirby Smart, for blowing it. I tell you what, I've thought about that Georgia Ole Miss game every day since it happened. It's annoyed me every day since it happened because Georgia blowing that money line parlay with Indiana, one of the losers, and they had that game in hand. Kirby Smart blew it, but I'm going to go, when in doubt, go with the Dogs. I do have a little bit of doubt about these plays, no question about it. These are not going to be like Indiana over Alabama or Indiana against Ohio State. These are not like five-star plays for me, but right now I'm going to go with both Dogs. Ole Miss plus 3.5 and Oregon plus 3.5. I'll roll with those and hope for the best. 52-36-3. And I've been on a pretty good run here late in the season. Hopefully at least one of these Dogs cash, and I think there's a decent chance we get them both in.
All right, Matt. I will add Ole Miss and Miami first half under. FanDuel has 26.5 right now. 24.5's out there. Obviously 24, 23 key numbers when it comes to first half total. So still 24.5, probably fine, but I'll take the little extra cushion there at FanDuel, 26.5 from grading purposes. We'll split a unit on Oregon, Indiana total here. We'll go first half under 23.5. Full game under 47, and I will also take Oregon plus the points. And once again, worth noting, Oregon, we're going to wait a little bit for grading purposes. We'll grade it at 3.5, but we're going to see if we can get fours before the game ultimately kicks off. A 3-1 week last week, 6-2 this postseason, and 52-46-4 on the year. So should be some fun ones, Matt. You and I will be on the air on Thursday night, live betting Ole Miss and Miami, and you will also be on the air Friday night for the Circa Friday Football Invitational. What's the latest on the contest, Matt? We've got some pretty good handicappers that have had some great seasons in the Circa Friday Football Invitational.
Yeah, we've got the Boston Strangler on top. He's squeezing the life out of the competition right now. Chris Massaro, he's got the bear in a headlock. He's got Jason Jarvis down, ready for a ground and pound. Chris Massaro has got the lead going into the final 2 weeks. Three plays this week, three plays next week. So the Bears are going to basically have to run the table with his plays to have a shot to catch Massaro. Same thing for Jason Jarvis. Kenny White's on the move up to standings. And it looks like Massaro is going to be the winner, though. I think we could start to fit him for the green jacket at this point. With 2 weeks to go. Expanded the contest this year from 18 weeks to 20, but you can't really do seven plays this week, Tim, or next week. So the contestants only have three plays this week and three next week. We're almost at the finish line, and then we can start talking about the Circa College Hoops Challenge.
Looking forward to that, and we'll give those plays out on the Saturday tailgate show as we did last year. But a quick reminder before we hit a break here, we are almost at 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. So if you don't know by now, we have every episode up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. Been really impressed by how much that has grown this year. It's the first year we've had a dedicated YouTube page. So let's get to 1,000 before the end of the season and continue to hit that five-star review five-star rating, I should say, and hit us with a review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Let's finish strong. We've had some great numbers all year, and let's continue to grow the podcast, hopefully with some winners as well this week. All right, we bid farewell to Matt Newmans, and when we come back on the other side, Dan Rubenstein of the Solid Verbal Podcast, an in-depth preview of Oregon and Indiana. So let's do that. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we keep it rolling here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And, you know, it's been a while since I've brought on our good friend from the Solid Verbal Podcast. Sometimes you have to reach across the aisle and have a little podcast, some friendlies here. So,
of course.
Dan Rubenstein, Oregon alum, joins us right now here on the podcast. And I know you're a busy man this week. A lot of people want to get your insights on your beloved Ducks. We were talking off air a little bit. And yeah, it's funny because, you know, Oregon obviously has been around from a power standpoint for quite some time. But you look at this game, and we talked about it to start the podcast with Matt Newmans. There seems to be a whole lot of Indiana love out there. And I'm not saying that Oregon is getting overlooked, but they feel like they're kind of getting overlooked for a team that just won 23-0 in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, and I think some of that is just that Indiana beat Ohio State with everybody watching. Mm-hmm. Indiana beat Alabama in the Rose Bowl, whereas Oregon beat Texas Tech at, you know, for me, 11 a.m. Central in a not sold out Hard Rock Stadium against a Texas Tech team, which has been relevant on this kind of stage for 3 months, right? So, and by the way, that's not me throwing shade in any direction. Texas Tech was excellent this season. But just in terms of like the visibility of Indiana's excellence, it's just on a different level. So I understand why people are hopping on because of both the excellence and like you're watching the Rose Bowl, you're watching the Big Ten championship game. And so Indiana has done it with the brightest of lights on them. So people understandably are very excited about this.
You know, there's so many different angles about both of these games. We will get some thoughts on Ole Miss and Miami a little bit later, but you know, for me, a question I think it's fair to ask, and it's obviously not as much in our face as the Ole Miss disaster with their coaches going back and forth to LSU. But the fact of the matter is Oregon's offensive coordinator is the new head coach of Kentucky, and he's been busy this week getting pieces to the portal. Shout out my guy, Kenny Minchie, going
Kenny
down
Minchie,
to
yeah.
Kentucky. And then Tosh Lupoy is doing the same at Cal. They just got portal commit from Rutgers, a wide receiver. They're
big
busy
receiver,
as
yeah.
well. So how much of a concern is that to the Oregon faithful that, you know, look, Tosh Lupoy and Will Stein are still going to do their job come Friday night, but they're double dipping right now. Is that a concern at all when it comes to Oregon heading into this game?
Yes, but we'll see, right? That like this is a very binary thing, right? That if Oregon's offense is good and they start out on a roll with a nice scripted opening drive and they make a bunch of good decisions and execute on third and fourth down or third and fourth and goal, then you forgive Will Stein for pulling double duty. Not forgive, but you understand that he's pulling double duty and you tip your cap for effectively doing it. If Oregon comes out and is flat and Indiana clearly seems one step ahead of where Oregon's offense is looking to go or where Oregon's defense is looking to go, vice versa, then you say, well, something went wrong preparing for this game. And even though, again, you tip your cap to Indiana, you can understand that the nights of sleep aren't as robust for both of these guys and that their attention isn't fully locked in. But I don't know. I lean towards extending grace because this is game, 15 mm-hmm. for Oregon? It's not like they're coming into this situation blind, you know, like certain broadcasters who don't learn names or something like that, calling a game where they're just like, they understand what works for this program. They've game planned for Indiana before. They know where Oregon was in the Texas Tech game. This is not early on in the season. They have a really great understanding for their personnel. And, you know, that changes over the course of, you know, injuries and guys leaving for the portal mid playoff, as I think they just lost a running back, Oregon did, to the portal a few minutes ago. But no, they have a pretty keen understanding of how to call a big Oregon game. And so, yeah, maybe like a little bit of attention to detail watching tape earlier in the week or something like that maybe isn't where it was, but they've been preparing for these teams, knowing who they could possibly play for quite some time now. So it's a factor, but if Oregon loses this game, I don't think on, you know, Saturday morning or whatever, we're going to say like, well, if Will Stein turned down Kentucky, they would have won. I think that's short-sighted.
So go back to October 11th, and, you know, we always kind of look back at point spreads and say, all right, how much has the market moved? So that game closed around 7 in favor of Oregon. It was at Autzen, so you got to give them a little bit of home field. So if we say 3.5-4 points, you're talking about on a neutral back in October, Oregon was around 3.5 points better in the eyes of the odds makers. Now,
right,
it's Indiana 3.5, and it started 4.5. You've seen a little bit of love come into the market, at least from the people who move the market, not the casual bettors, because the casual bettors, as we talked to Johnny Avello of DraftKings on VSiN Primetime Monday night, are all over Indiana. And if you look at our VSiN.com betting splits, it's, you know, 80% bets on Indiana. But how much do you take from the game in October and look at it from that stand vantage point heading into early January, Dan? And how much better is Indiana in your eyes? And how much better is Oregon in your eyes as they head into this game?
Both better. immense amount of credit and immense amount of weight to what Indiana was able to accomplish in Eugene. One, that's an extremely difficult place to play. Two, that was a tie game in the fourth quarter, and the momentum had fully gone away from the Hoosiers after a pick six tied it at 20, and they did not waver. The defense was terrific. They intercept, they swarm. I think they intercepted Dante Moore twice in that fourth quarter. The pressure kept coming, and there was just sort of the belief seemed to be unwavering on the Indiana side. And so if you have that in mid-October, and then you're able to, you know, beat Penn State the way that they did in the last second and beat Ohio State in the way that they did, obviously, with the time off that nobody can handle other than Indiana heading into the quarterfinals if you have a bye, and Indiana handles it to the tune of a 35-point win against Alabama in the Rose, that it all sort of, you can go back to that. You can go back to the Indiana win and say, like, there's just, they don't make mistakes, they don't beat themselves, and if you are going to make mistakes, if you are going to let your guard down, Indiana's going to constrict you like a boa. And that has been the case all season long. Even in the close games, even in the blowouts, whatever, Indiana's happy to take advantage of your mistakes, be it procedural, be it turnover, whatever. I think Oregon going into that game, the thought from Vegas, the thought from odds makers was, look at how explosive this offense is. They're coming off of a bye. There's belief after the win at Penn State. You know, it's a big game. It's Autzen. It's, you know, game day was in town. That Indiana has beaten up on a lot of OK teams, but they're not of this level after we saw what happened against, you know, Ohio State and Notre Dame last season. Mm-hmm. Well, as what happens sometimes, they were incorrect. And I don't, you know, Oregon players talk about Indiana being more prepared and more locked in than they were. They were feeling good after the Penn State win. That's a signature of a better program and a better team, that you're locked in for all of your biggest games, and Oregon wasn't. So that's a reason to think Oregon might improve in this game. I think Oregon's defense has gotten better. I think Indiana's offense, as Fernando Mendoza's gotten more comfortable and worked in a guy like Charlie Becker, a big receiver, you know, their deep route receiver with his emergence when he came in, when I think it was Elijah Surratt was beat up earlier in the season. So it's going to be a heavyweight battle. You know, there are keys on both sides for both of these teams, but they're both better. They're both ready. You can see an obvious path for each of these teams to win.
You know, Dan, you go back to the Orange Bowl a little bit. The defense was exceptional for Oregon. It's funny, the perception of the Oregon defense, which I thought was hilarious, which was, oh, you know, they gave up a lot of points to James Madison. I'm like, yeah, they were 48-13 with the ball going in. It's human nature, right, to take your foot off the gas pedal. So congrats to JMU and all your success and your handsome former coach, Bob Chesney. Great head of hair. I'm sure you'll talk about it off-season.
Pennsylvania native, I believe.
Sure, why not?
Everybody's from Pennsylvania. I mean, that's how it works.
Ty Hildenbrand is holding it down. They're still there in the Allentown, Pennsylvania area. Still waiting for him to wear his Muhlenberg basketball shirt, but that's a discussion for another day.
Culpmont, PA is where he was born.
Oh, there you go.
I have no idea where that is.
It's a big state.
It's a large state. Continue.
It's a big state. I've driven all over it. It's not the most enjoyable drive from east to west, if you've ever done that. But when you think at this offense for Oregon, and, you know, Texas Tech's defense is nasty, and, you know, they showed it at times, certainly. What's the route to success? Because this was an offense that was held to less than 300 yards at home against Indiana back in October. What's the route to success in your eyes to Oregon having those explosive plays that we saw against James Madison and we've seen for a good chunk of the year?
It's running the ball. They were able to run the ball against Indiana the first time. And Jordan Davison, who had success, he went for over, I think, 7 yards a carry against the Hoosiers that first. They went away from it for a little bit. I think everything is sort of predicated on Oregon getting to third and short in this game, right? That you take the ball out of Dante Moore's hands sometimes because you give yourself options on, you know, third and fourth and short. Everything opens up when you're able to run the ball, right? You're able to gas the defense. You're able to, you know, rest your own defense. You're able to really utilize play action. And I think Indiana's pass defense is so good. Obviously, they're down Stephen Daly, one of their big edges. But I don't know what they collapse the pocket so much against Alabama, and their corners are so good. Their secondary is so good. Not that Oregon can't test and win. They had a coverage breakdown, and Oregon had a long touchdown early, I think, to Malik Benson in the first matchup. But test the defense, find the holes, But ultimately, if Oregon can't run it against Indiana and Dante Moore has to win this game alone with a very good receiving core and tight ends and everything, that's the heavier ask to me, that he has to be so good and has to be so cognizant of the pressure, has to be so able to diagnose every single coverage. They play a mean, mean zone. And so you're going to have to sort of take what's in front of you and, you know, smaller windows. And sort of like one of the things that the keys to this game, both directions, is just backbreaking third downs, right? What does Fernando Mendoza pick up on third and seven when nothing's there? What does Dante Moore pick up? Where does a safety sitting in the zone on third and four, 5 yards in, does he come down with the ball and fall backwards the correct way, right? That like just like little things are going to decide this game. And to me, both, you know, it's Fernando Mendoza improvising and it's Oregon staying ahead of the sticks enough where they don't have to count on obvious passing downs.
Which receiver do you think for Oregon has the most success or is the key to a victory for the Ducks?
Pure receiver Malik Benson, who has come on really strong this season.
I would include
Kenyon second
Sadiq
half.
In there.
Yeah, I think it actually might be Kenyon Sadiq.
Yeah.
I think if you're tight end slash hybrid receiver, whatever he's doing in his role, because they have been playing a lot more 12 personnel, two tight ends with Sadiq doing more receiver stuff and Jamari Johnson doing more tight end stuff. And they do that obviously to have the running versatility as well. But if Sadiq is getting open downfield and Dante Moore is recognizing it quickly, he's an extremely difficult ask for linebackers and safeties because he does have the athleticism of a receiver and he is built like a tight end. I think he might be the first or second tight end off the board in next spring's draft. If he has four catches for 81 yards, you're thrilled as an Oregon fan only knowing that about the game.
So when we look at Indiana, as we've talked about, they're the only undefeated team remaining, have an opportunity to get to 16-0. The run is, look, we've discussed it on the show. The run has been magical.
Preposterous.
I mean, it's the greatest turnaround in sports. In sports, nothing, in my opinion, really compares to it. To take the doormat of Power Four football and put them into, I don't want to say superpower range, but here they are. They're the betting favorite to win the national championship, which is just insane. Yeah. So as you look at this game, you're obviously an Oregon guy, but you host a national podcast, so you've been talking about Indiana all year long. What does Indiana do to win again over Oregon?
Make Oregon mistakes count. I think, which is the Indiana formula, right? That they are great. Mendoza, obviously, Heisman winner. The running backs have been strong. The receivers, when they're all healthy, have been very difficult to deal with. The defense plays extremely disciplined, whatever. The difference with Indiana is they play so cleanly for the most part. You know, Fernando Mendoza has, he has thrown a bunch of dangerous balls this year, a lot of which have not mattered. But like he did throw the pick six against Oregon. But if we've seen anything from this Oregon offense is they get in their own way a good deal, whether it's maybe poor play calling on third and fourth and short and high leverage moments in their biggest games, whether it's bad snaps, whether it's fumbled exchanges, whether it's interceptions, whatever. If Indiana continues to make Oregon or any other team pay for those mistakes, taking advantage of short fields, you know, I just don't see a way that they lose this game. I mean, I don't know what that number is of mistakes, but if Indiana continues to capitalize like they have, because really the onus is on Oregon. Oregon lost this game already. Mm-hmm. They know what needs to get better. They know the what has to improve along the offensive line in terms of identifying where the rush is coming from, et cetera. Indiana just needs to play Indiana football, and they have a really good chance in this game. So not to overthink it, not to, you know, get away from what has worked this season, and really to make Oregon pay for any potential mistakes, I think it's plenty for Indiana to win.
So I gave out my bets already. So my first bet, Dan, was under the total, 47.5. That's moved a little bit in my favor, hashtag CLV. I do think first half under two is a look. I think this is kind of a,
I like that.
As you mentioned, heavyweight fight. And I did give out Oregon plus the points. I'm going to wait and see if we get a 4 or 4.5, maybe return into the market. How do you see this game playing out? I know it's challenging. You're an Oregon fan, but you're a pro.
Yeah.
You're a pro. How do you see this one playing out on Friday night?
I am just going with trends. I am just going with what we've seen from this sport over the years. It's extremely tough to go undefeated in a regular type season. Now you're asked to go undefeated 16-0 if you're Indiana. You're asking Indiana basically to not have a letdown after a historic Rose Bowl win. And look, Indiana's going to be up for this game. They're going to be ready for this game. It's a huge moment. I am going Oregon to win, but I think it's, if you simulate this game 100 times, I think there's a good chance Indiana wins about 70 to 74 of them or something like that. But circumstantially, I think Oregon's in a good place. I don't know why. I can't tell you I was super confident in Dante Moore after the Texas Tech game. I don't think Indiana's defense has that kind of heft and danger up front as Texas Tech, which is not a slight against Indiana. They've been excellent. But just Texas Tech was that special all season long. And I've watched a lot of Oregon football. There has been no front that I've watched that was able to forget the like pass rush and pocket collapsing to tackle that well against the run as what Texas Tech was able to do. So Oregon has been a program this season under Dan Lanning. As soon as you think the defense is broken, the defense is great. As soon as you think the offense is broken, the offense is great. He diagnoses and that staff diagnose really well. They are very good mechanics by and large. So I'm going to go with Oregon here. It has nothing to do with Indiana because I just think Indiana has more ways to win. I just think Oregon in this specific spot is potentially peaking. If their defense continues to look like it did, then you're asking the offense to do less. I have Oregon winning 20-17. Very tight game, somewhat low scoring.
Ooh, man. Oregon 20-17. Sign me up, baby. I'll take that all day.
Yeah.
Every day. Let's get an under. Let's get an Oregon win. All right, before I let you run.
Yes.
Quick thoughts on Ole Miss and Miami. I mentioned it to start the podcast. If you go back in time to about a month ago, Dan, when we thought Miami was not going to get into the playoff, they were 200-1 to win the championship. And now they're favored against Ole Miss in the semifinals. This sport is crazy. And that defense is special right now.
Yes.
How do you see Trinidad Chambliss against Reuben Bain and Mezidor happening out on Thursday night?
I can't help but to always favor the large humans. We talked about this on the show. The team with the better large humans generally wins these games, right? If you're looking at speed, if you're looking at, you know, fun offenses. And look, Ole Miss has dropped 30 on everybody this season. They went to Norman and dropped 30. They just scored, what, 39 against Georgia. Even in a loss earlier in the season, they scored 30-plus against Georgia. So even if Miami's defense is a cut above everyone that they've seen this year, open to that possibility, absolutely. Holding Ole Miss to 23, 17, 25 would be an accomplishment for Miami. And then you're talking about, well, is Miami the type of team that can score 23, 27, 28 and win a game like that? Maybe. It hasn't, you know, they scored 10 in the opening round win in the wind. They score 24, but only, I think, what, 17 was on offense with the pick six in there. I think Miami has more about them that can dictate this game, and I have them winning. I forgot what I wrote down, like 23-21 or something, so I think technically that's Ole Miss covering. I'm going to side with the large humans. I'm going to side with an offense that has, since those losses, played largely mistake-free. I don't love the pick, but I like Miami's speed more than I like Ole Miss's power. And That's where I ultimately come down with the speed on defense and the combination of running backs. And, you know, we know about Malachi Toney, but some of the other receivers have made plays. So that's where I'm coming down. I hate the pick because I think nothing funnier exists than Ole Miss winning the national championship with their coach opting to coach for someone else before the playoff. But I'm going to go Miami. Slightly.
Yeah, we just previewed this game. Did not have a bet on anything. Looked a little bit towards the first half under because that just feels like if Miami can suffocate them, hold the ball for a while, that's what they want to do. So that's probably a play I'll make, but nothing official yet. Will you, Dan Rubenstein, be in attendance if your beloved Ducks win on Friday? Will you go to the national championship in Miami?
I've been asked this before. I have a very supportive wife, and she was like, if you want to go, go, whatever. It is more, okay, I went to the last two Oregon appearances against Ohio State and Auburn, watched two losses in person, so now I'm like, am I the problem, right? Am I like the Taylor Swift, I'm the problem, it's me. And then two, I'm old now. You're old now. We're all old now. We love our couches. We love our bathrooms. We love our snack opportunities. It would be fun to watch it with Oregon friends, which is why, like, if I hear a bunch of people I know and went to school with are going, then, like, that could maybe sway me.
Yeah.
But then you're like, oh, I got to get a hotel room. And I know Tim Murray's connected up and down, you know, the Miami, Biscayne Bay area.
I'm telling you, man, the Murray Casa down in Fort Lauderdale has a nice... nice.
Are these parents? Who are the Murrays in Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah, my parents live down there.
I do have
snowbirds.
I do have some connections to couches in the area. I could probably find some tickets. It will be weird to have Hard Rock Stadium sold out, right? With Miami football not. But that's the thing too. If it's Oregon, Miami in Hard Rock Stadium, I don't think I want to go. Like that
one. I actually did back to back games in Hard Rock Stadium. So I went to the Penn State game last year, which I am so happy I went to. So maybe convincing you.
That's true.
I felt like when Notre Dame beat Georgia, I knew I had to go to that game because I did not have a strong feel that they would beat Ohio State, which I was accurate about. So it was great. It was an amazing game. And then I went back for the season opener, not as amazing. Not as amazing. So, you know, you know, it's as the kids do, right? They do this thing, right, all the time.
Yeah, you do the 6-7.
Yeah, so...
it's also freezing where I live full time.
Yeah,
and the idea of going to Miami
in mid-January might not suck.
No, not at all. So I'm open to it. I got to look at flights. I got to, you know, I do all this stuff.
Well, take care of business on Friday first.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Dan, you're the man. Solid Verbal Podcast. You guys are all over the place. Let people know where they can obtain all of your great content.
Thank you. SolidVerbal.com and look on YouTube for Solid Verbal. We post all of that. You can see the pristine HD video that we are always uploading. So, yeah, that's easy enough.
He is Dan Rubenstein. He and my buddy Ty Hildenbrandt give you the Solid Verbal many times a week. It's one of the best out there. Dan, appreciate it, man. Best of luck to your Ducks on
Friday.
Thank
you. Appreciate it. Anytime.
There he is, Dan Rubenstein. That's going to do it for this episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Wednesdays with Wes. We'll get the Indiana side of things. Wes Reynolds will join us tomorrow, as well as Brett Ciancia of Pick 6 Previews. Thanks to Matt Newmans, Wyatt, Ryan Hunter. For Dan, I'm Tim. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.